Hail and hello, everyone. Welcome to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, a Midgard Musings production. Join me, Jesse, your host, as we discuss random heathen-related topics and various other things in an attempt to find where, if any, heathen worldviews can be applied. You can support this podcast by clicking on the Linktree link in the description or show notes. You can also follow me on all of my social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and become a patron on Patreon. Join me every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Central on all major podcast streaming platforms, including Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and many, many. If you wish to have your voice heard on the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, you can dial in to 615-671-9832. Thank you all once again for listening to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast. Enjoy and hail to you all. All right, folks, welcome back. Welcome, welcome, welcome to September. It is the first day of September at the time that this podcast is being aired. I'm actually recording this off cycle because of my guest today. Very excited to finally be able to reveal who I have on the show today and all that. Yeah, so you're going to have to forgive me for feeling a little bit off right now. I know for you guys watching, it's not gonna really feel much like that, but for me it is, because it is a Saturday morning. It's a Saturday morning still here for me, and for my guest it is a Saturday evening. I have to adjust my recording schedule for my guest today, which we will be welcoming him in just a moment. But now that we are in September, I do just want to remind everybody that there is a meetup coming to the Middle Tennessee area in the Barfield Crescent Park in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, on Saturday, September 17th. There is a Facebook event page for this. It's going to be annotated, linked down in the description or show notes, wherever you catch all that information from. So be sure to check that out. And if you're in the vicinity and want to come out, and it is a potluck style park moot. So we are asking for attendees to bring an item of food to share with the folks who come. I'm still debating on what I'm going to be bringing. I've heard that there's going to be chili. I've heard that there's going to be maybe some like slider sandwiches, you know, so any kind of like picnic, you know, cookout kind of side, you know, whether you want to bring like a coleslaw or a salad what do you call those things, a charcuterie, right, which is just a fancy name for, you know, meat and cheese and vegetable or fruit tray. I'm probably going to be bringing some chicken. It's going to be again in the Barfield Crescent Park on Saturday, September 17th. We're expecting to get quite a big turnout. You know, there's people coming from different parts of the state of Tennessee as well as from out of state. I believe we are expecting some people from northern Alabama. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be great. I actually have a friend coming all the way from Missouri to spend the weekend with me, and he is going to be, of course, joining us there as well. So for everybody that's looking to get together with, you know, like-minded heathens, pagans, I know we are
going to be talking about the Hrafnkell saga. So if you go to the event page that's linked and stuff, you'll find a PDF, an electronic version of that. I know in today's day and age, we're all very keen on the digital versions of things. So you have the electronic document and PDF form that's linked in the event group or the event page. So if you're wanting to brush yourself up on the Hrafnkell saga, you can read it. There's also going to be a podcast linked about the saga as well. So if you're the type of person that just likes to sit back, listen, you got that. So tons of options. And another thing too about kind of going off track, I mentioned to you guys, I'm recording here on a Saturday. Normally I record on a Monday, but because of my guest's time difference, I'm adjusting. I'm also just like a little bit foggy in the head because lesson learned. My wife loves to well, she doesn't love to watch, but well, she does. She loves Jason Aldean and watching him perform. she can watch him live perform, but like she's got these like live DVDs. Don't ever get into a drinking event with my wife while she's watching Jason Aldean. Put it that way. It was a hell of a fun time, but boy, oh boy. I'm feeling a little bit foggy in the brain from that event last night, so I've got some things to help settle my stomach today. Yeah. All right. So now that we've got all of the housekeeping stuff, you guys be sure to please don't forget that during this time we are running a fundraising campaign for my heathen brother who has been on this podcast a number of times. It's Dingo. You guys should be aware and know of him by now. And if not, check my back catalog for episodes that feature Dingo. But he is one of my best friends in the world. He is my heathen brother, my tribesman, my Gothi. He's just going through a hard time, and we're trying to help him with some financial aid. And I wanted to open this up to the larger pagan community. So there is a Ko-fi link in the Linktree link that's posted in all of my videos and all of my podcasts. But today and through till the next couple of months, so from now until like November, we are looking to raise some funds for him. And we have a goal set at $500. We're about, at the least the time of this recording, we're, you know, in the 40%-ish range, 43%, I think was the last time I checked. So by the time this airs, it could be more, but check the Ko-fi link specifically. I'll have that annotated separately, so that way you're not having to scroll through all of my Linktree links. But it is in the Linktree link, so if you see something that says buy me a coffee, then that's the one, but it'll be annotated separately as well. And for the price of a cup of coffee is what, you know, it's why they call it Ko-fi. So for the price of a cup of coffee, you can help out Dingo. So check all that out. But anyway, today let's get into our guest speaker and our guest attendee today. So this fella is all the way out in the United Kingdom. So as far as I can recall, this is my first guest from the UK. I've had folks on the channel from like Norway and other places of the world. I've had guests from Australia and all over the United States. But this is, to my recollection, the first guest on this podcast and on the channel from the United Kingdom. And he is a wood carver. He carves god poles of various sizes and styles. What he does, he has a very unique style, and his aesthetic is incredible, like how he envisions the gods and brings them to life through wood carving. His name is Chris. His company is called Gungnir God Poles. And I'm very excited to welcome him in today to talk about, you know, all kinds of things, you know, carving the gods, his background and history within heathenry, how heathenry in the UK, you know, I would love to talk to somebody who's actually a practicing pagan in the United Kingdom versus practicing pagans and people I know here in the United States, and what the differences or similarities with that might be. And just, I don't know, just get to talking about wherever our ramblings lead us. So for the first time on the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast, would like you all to please welcome in Chris from Gungnir Godbolts. All right, everybody. Welcome to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast. Chris from Gungnir Godbolts for the very first time. Harlan, welcome, sir.
All right, thanks for having us, Jess.
Yeah. I was telling the audience a little bit before, you know, I do like a intro to the show, and I'm lighting my incense right now because this is kind of like a little custom here. But I was telling everybody that you're my first guest from the UK, and how excited that is, or excited I am to host you here. And I love your setup, man. Like I've seen your videos and this space that you're in right now. This serves as like your chill zone, but also you work here too, right? Like this is kind of like your office,
yeah,
as it were.
I tend to work just outside it, just because of sawdust and stuff like that. But you know, this space, it's kind of everything to us. You know, it's that chill time. I'll have breakfast here in the morning. I'll chill here on my own in the evening. But the family get together here too, and we have friends over, and we sit around the fire with drinks and stuff. It kind of serves all purposes. But what's interesting is that anyone who comes here says as soon as they come in here, it feels different without knowing anything about the stuff. So this place has got a different feel, and they like it. It's a comfortable feel, you know.
Yeah.
It's been a labour of love. It's, you know, it's first sort of incarnation was probably about 10 years ago. It was a metal structure that got blown over in about 6 different storms and stuck back together. And now it's something a bit sturdier now, and hopefully sort of here to stay. But yeah, it's definitely a great little space to have.
Yeah, it does. It looks, and that's funny how you say, or interesting rather, how you say when people come into that space, they, whether or not they maybe know about your, you know, religious practices, paganism, anything like that, it feels welcoming and it feels different when you step into that space. And I have a similar thing to compare to that, or I can relate to that, because over here, my group of tribesmen, right? Like my nearest and dearest people who I practice heathenry with, we have a space on it's like I said, one of my friends, his parents' property has our vey, or our grove. At one point in time, they called it the Woodland Cathedral, and it's a huge encounter or encirclement, you know, like it's a rock enclosure, you know, so it's a round circle space. But people that have come there in the past who aren't even pagan step there, and they immediately feel just the different, I don't know, energy and just feeling around it. And with as much work as you do near and around that space and how you venerate or practice, it's no wonder to me, you know, it's no surprise to me that it can be felt by others.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think there are those places in nature that they do just feel different, don't they? Not just to us who are kind of in tune with those ways, but just to most people can feel. And I think that's how a lot of sacred spaces evolve. You know, our ancestors just knew. Mm-hmm. They had that feeling. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, look at Stonehenge. They dragged those stones for hundreds of miles to put them there. You know, there was a reason why they did it, you know. Some places are just special, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would love to continue to talk more about that, but I do want to let people know, or give some people that have maybe never heard of you or know what it is you do. So Gungnir Godbolts, this is your wood carving venture, right? Your wood carving business. This is what you do to bring life to the gods.
At the moment, it's a hobby and it's a passion rather than a business. The long-term goal is to make it a business. I do it alongside a full-time job and parenting and everything else. And I'm kind of in a position now where I've been at it for 9 years now this year. And it's it's a great position to be in, that my demand far outstrips my capacity to create at the moment. I live in an expensive part of the world, and having done a little bit of maths, it's just not quite there yet where we could live comfortably off it without it becoming a pressure. And I never want it to become a pressure. It's something that I love doing. I do it to relax and to unwind, you know. I never want to be doing it because I've got bills to pay. So,
yeah,
you know, the business side of it is coming, but I'm in no rush for that at the moment.
Okay. So how long? So you say 9 years now. So nearly a decade you've been carving.
Yeah, it's incredible to think, really, how fast that time has gone, but also it feels like I've been doing it my whole life as well, you know, and just how many pieces I've done in that time. I mean, I never set out to do it. I always used to, just for fun, I would draw and I would paint mythological characters, and eventually the characters I was drawing started to take on this kind of chisel, blocky effect, and I was looking at them and thinking, that might look quite cool in 3D, you know. And one day I was just clearing out our garden shed in our old place, and I just found this small piece of timber, just an offcut of timber. And I just looked at it and I just thought, I'm gonna give it a go. I'm gonna try it with that piece of timber. So I just took a basic knife and I sat down and I worked away a little thaw over 3 or 4 days. And it turned out pretty good, you know. I was really pleased with it, and I posted a few pictures on Facebook, and some of my friends said, wow, that's really cool, could you do me one? Yeah, sure, I'll do you one. And they posted pictures on Facebook, and then their friends started messaging me, and all of a sudden it became a thing, you know.
Yeah.
And now I've done hundreds and sent them all over the world, and it's grown into something I never intended it to or anticipated that it would, but it's been an incredible journey, and I love it more than anything I've ever done, you know. The friendships you make, you know, the contacts you have with people, just hearing what I create means to people is, you know, it's really humbling sometimes and quite hard to believe that, you know, because I create these things and I like them, but to know that other people like them and feel the energy from them as well,
yeah,
is really
it's rewarding, quite isn't it?
It is. It's, you know, I can't think of anything more fulfilling than that. Recently, I visited a friend of mine. He's not heathen, he's not pagan, he knows nothing about it. We were doing a bit of work together, and I took him a little Odin pendant that I made. And he unwrapped it and held it in his hand, and he sat down and he started to cry. And he said, I'm so embarrassed, but at the same time, I don't know what it is, but this is, it's just done something to me. There's something in it, there's something I can feel from it. And it's, to see that firsthand, it's always lovely to get messages from people when they say, when they unwrap it and they feel it in the hands and feel it, but to see that firsthand, see somebody, you know, experience what I put into it, it's, you know, there is nothing more fulfilling than that. And somebody who knows nothing about it, you know, who's only ever seen Odin and the Marvel film,
yeah,
you know, to feel that was
right.
that was really quite sort of eye opening to me. Yeah, really,
I mean, special. Yeah, definitely. I think that you know, so I have some God posts or God poles, whatever you want to call them, representations of the gods that a friend of mine here in the States, you know, he carves as well. And it's really, I love seeing how different craftspeople envision the gods and how they bring an inanimate object like wood or stone or whatever, and how they give that item a personality, an aesthetic, you know. And the differences between maybe you and other people that craft, you know, it's, they're all beautiful in their own way. Like, they're all unique. And that's what I think is so great about working with folks who do this with their hands, because, you know, you could go to, you know, an online store or get something that is like literally a casted mold of a figure, you know what I mean, like a statue or whatever, and there's literally hundreds or thousands of them being produced, and they're so, you know, nothing against people that want to get that if it speaks to them, right? But I'm like, well, you got something that, you know, 500 other people across the world have. Where's the, you know, the Odin or the Thor or whatever that you carve today, it's not going to be exactly the same as the one that you carve tomorrow. And it's not the same as exactly as the one that you carved last week. Like there's different unique.
Exactly. Things. No two are ever the same. I don't think you can be handmade or something like that. And like you said, I love seeing other people's work as well. You know, I don't ever want to be the guy who carves God posts. I love seeing other people's work. The thing that bugs me, and it does really bug me, is when I see people copy my stuff. There's a few who have had some words from me about that, because I think they say, you know, it was out of respect, so you know, I thought you'd be flattered. It's not respectful, it's disrespectful.
Be unique yourself, right? Like, do something of your own vision.
Exactly that. You know, my style is not an emulation of anyone else. It's something that comes from my relationship with the gods that's developed and it's evolved over many years. So when I see someone do a direct copy of one of my pieces, that's actually quite offensive, not only to me, but the whole process and what it means. So I tend to be quite diplomatically, I don't know, probably a little bit hostile about that, and just let people know that it's not acceptable and whatever spirit it was meant in.
Yeah, you need to reconsider that. I definitely get where you're coming from.
And most people are fine about that and say, look, sorry, I didn't mean it that way. And I can see now why you might be upset.
Yeah.
And they'll do it again. You know, I've had a couple of issues with a couple of people that persisted. But, you know.
Well, the other thing too is like when. Yeah. Well, the other thing too is when you carve the way you carve, and when, like, for instance, you know, my God post here that I have, Odin's Beard Woodworking is the name of the company that I got my stuff from, and Matt carves these or has carved all of my idols or God poles. You know, the energy, the spirit behind what you do, it's not just a physical item anymore. You're bringing something to life, and part of your life is being imbued into that object. So the spirit behind it, I think that's part of what people are feeling when, like you say, your friend who's not pagan and doesn't understand or follow anything that maybe we understand or follow still feels something. It's because they're your friend, somebody who connects with you, and that connection is alive inside of this otherwise inanimate object. And you can't recreate that by, you know, copying from somebody else or doing it exactly the same way.
I think you're absolutely right. I think any human energy and creativity that goes into something has a resonance that other people feel, you know. And like I said, when it is it's a soulless copy, I've seen something it's not there.
Where do you get your material? Like, do you source your wood from the land, or like what's the process like for you to procure the materials?
A mix, really. I live near some woodland that is very actively forested by a volunteer group to keep it healthy and in good order. So there's always freshly cut wood around there. Lots of hazel, hawthorn, ash.
Yeah.
I have a willow tree growing in my garden, which is always a good chop every couple of years. So I generally have a pile of willow logs sat here. And for a fair few pieces, I will shop locally, ethically. Sourced sort of pine, just from, you know, local hardwares and stores and stuff. I always make sure that it's, you know, it's environmentally sound and sourced stuff. So yeah, a bit of a mix, really.
What's your favorite, if you have one, material to work with? If you had to pick, like, oh, I really like carving, you know, ash or elm or willow or whatever. Do you have a favorite?
I do really like willow, actually. I think partly because we've now got this family connection with it. We've lived in that room now for 4 years, and the tree is sort of a part of our family. and it's, you know, it's softwood, but it's not so soft. Like, birch is like butter, you know. You just rip it away.
Yeah, you sneeze on it, and it creates an cut into it. Yeah,
but willow's got a bit more resistance to it than that. But at the same time, it's a really, you can get some really nice smooth flowing lines, and the feedback you get from it, the, you know, the resistance, the feel of the, you know, the timber pushing back into the blade and into your forearm, it's it's hard to explain if you don't do it, but it's just a nice experience, you know. Mm.
So I've never carved like god poles, whatever, but I have dabbled in working with making rune sets. Part of what helps support like the channel and different things, you know, I can make a rune set for somebody, and you know, it's that gift exchange, you know, for this, you're helping me out. And like similarly with you and the willow, there's a maple tree that is has been here in our yard ever since my wife and I have lived here, and well before then. And throughout the years, you know, it's needed to be trimmed because it grows invasively to touch like the roof of our home. And, you know, you gotta take care of your yard. And part of that is, hey man, you know, you're getting all up in my space here. We got to cut a few limbs down and again, take care of it. And some of those limbs that have, you know, been removed for the sake of the health of the tree and of our yard have been crafted into my own rune sets and other rune sets. And yeah, I think that whole connection with the spirit of the land that exists in these living beings, because the trees are alive, the air, the ground, everything. It's a wonderfully bonding experience, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. It's something that's, you've got a personal relationship with, you know, it's a part of your life, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I've also seen some of your posts where you, do you carve driftwood also? Like, do you?
Yeah, I love driftwood. I think Ran is probably my favorite goddess of all. I've always loved the sea. I live about an hour from the sea. I'm sorry, I'm getting choked up. I smoke it now. I live about an hour from the coast, but you know, I just love to visit the sea. It just brings an instant just sense of calm and well-being. Literally feel myself go still inside whenever I hear the sea. It's, you know, it's something that's quite hard to explain, but it's a really special relationship that I have, and so I particularly love her. And whenever I go, I'll try and pick up some driftwood it's a completely different thing. Driftwood, depending on how long it's been in the sea and what kind of wood it is, you get something completely. Some is so soft and fragile, and some is, you know, as hard as concrete.
Yeah, right, almost petrified in a way. Right.
Yeah, absolutely that.
I love this thinking about like driftwood in a way, because again, you don't know what kind of wood it is, you don't know the origin of it, but it is something of its own. Like, there is nothing else that can, like, you can't go to the forest and find driftwood. No, you know what I mean? It's been made into driftwood through time and ordeal, right? Because of the tides and the experience of the coastal waters and all that stuff, it becomes something different than what it originally was before.
That's right. That's what I love about it. It's got a story. It's got its own life already. It's, you know, you don't know where it's been, where it's come from, you know.
Yeah.
Before I even do anything with it, so it's already got some magic in it. You know?
Yeah. I love making rune sets out of driftwood. It's one of the probably more popular materials that clients request me, because I'll either source birch or driftwood, because they're readily available in the market, you know, and so they love how the feel and the look of driftwood turns out after I finish making them, and it's one of I enjoy working with it. It's a pleasant experience.
Yeah, I love driftwood. And my own Ran, she still, every time it rains, she weeps sea salt. There's sort of like sort of white sort of powder sort of forms on her every time it rains. It's so deeply ingrained in the wood. I mean, I made her 3 years ago now, and whenever it rains, it brings out more sea salt.
Amazing. That's incredible. How ingrained it is into the material, after all this time, huh? Yeah, man. I'm, you know, where I'm originally from, of course, I'm in Tennessee now, which is a landlocked state. So if I want to go to the coast, I'm having to drive 8 hours in any direction just to get there. But I'm from the East Coast of the United States. So I'm from New York, and I grew up near the ocean. I was, again, less than an hour from the Atlantic coast, and I was 10 minutes away from a salted body of water that separates the North Shore to the state of Connecticut. So the Long Island Sound, I grew up in those waters too. And it's always, I yearn for it a lot. Like, I miss it. I've become very close to the inland bodies of water. So the streams, the rivers, the freshwater marshes, I feel very close in those aspects. When I'm there, it feels like I'm home. But I do. I miss the coast because it does. It carries its own life and it carries its own energy, and it's a different energy than the mountains' energy or the rivers and the valleys. It's different kind of personality, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. It absolutely is. Exactly that. The landscape around here is very rural. Just down the road from me, there's a village called Thursley, which literally translates to Thor's Lee.
Yeah.
The village sign is a green circle, and it's got Thor on it holding his hammer. Within the village, it's really cool that these things still live on in, you know, everything our country's been through, that, you know, the gods are still here. Within the village, there are three huge mounds of earth, and the third one is kind of red, and it's made of iron, stone, and covered in heather scrub and surrounded by pine trees, etc. And they're called the Devil's Jumps. Mm. And the local story is that Thor pursued the devil, probably Loki originally, but around the time of Christianization, I think a lot of these stories got adapted, pursued him across the landscape and swung his hammer at him three times. Three times the devil jumped and the hammer missed. And every time it struck the ground, it created one of these mounds in the earth. It goes back to what you were saying about, this is what I was getting to, personality of landscape. You go and stand on top of that. It's called the Stony Jump. And it just embodies Thor. Mm. About it. It's red, it's rock, it's iron.
Yeah, yeah. That is a great, okay, so that, I mean, that's great. I love the local, the folklore and the story. You're not going to find that in a book. At least I don't know of a book that I would ever, maybe, you know, English folklore or Saxon folklore. I don't know where I would ever find that. That is great. And that was another thing that I was wanting to maybe pick your brain a bit about, is how alive is heathenry in the UK versus here, like in the States? Now, comparatively speaking, I mean, I think globally, we are aware of a rising interest, or an insurgence rather, maybe, of like the interest to pursue paganism across different cultures. But Germanic heathenry, like Germanic paganism, which of course has its roots in your part of the world, and north, further north, of course, but it made its way there, and clearly, you know, there are places that still have nods to the old gods, like Thursley. I mean, that's literally a nameplace of Thor. We see that in other countries and other places as well, even up further north in like Scandinavia. And so how present, aside from that, I mean, how has it been in like the United Kingdom with active heathens? Like, are there groups in your area that people gather and do things together with? I don't know, events, whatever.
There are. So there's a group here called AUK, Asia Tree UK, who are kind of on a mission to create a national network and have hearts in sort of every area in the country. I'll be honest, you know, that's not my thing. I think what they're doing is great. It builds networks of people who are on their own and want to be with other like-minded people. That's brilliant. Me personally, it's not my thing. I'm more about my relationship with the land and with nature than I am about with other people. I've been to a couple of big sort of ritual setups, and I just felt nothing. It just wasn't there for me, where I can go and sit under a tree and I'm completely in the right place, you know.
Yeah.
But to get back to your question, yeah, it's fairly active here, I think. You know, it's far from mainstream, I would say, still. Mm-hmm. It's certainly becoming more common, and for good or bad, I think things like the Vikings TV show kind of brought it to the mainstream. So Thor, to the fore and got people thinking about it. And you see a lot of people walking around now with the haircut and Thor's hammer on. You wonder how serious they are about it, or whether it's a fashion statement and it'll be gone with the next one. I don't know, but it's certainly put it into people's minds, you know. And again, you know, the movies, you know, Stories of Thor and all that kind of thing. It's, you know, I was talking to a guy a little while ago, and that was his introduction to Thor and Loki and people like that. And he then went and picked up a book and realized that there's much more to it than Marvel, you know, and started to see some of the symbolism and what that represented, and understand the whole sort of heritage and culture that he didn't really know about before, because it's not widely taught in our schools, you know.
I think, you know, I was like, my introduction to it, and I would love to hear yours too, because I mean, I haven't always been pagan. I was raised in Christianity, and but I always, like, I remember, I think probably the first time where, like, the seed was planted, I don't remember how old exactly I was, but I was probably, like, a young teenager, and I went to, and this is, I was still in New York, and I went to a Renaissance fair, or a Renaissance festival, you know, so everybody's dressed in period clothing, and there's different types of characters and stuff roaming around, and I found my way to an area that had a very strong, you know, like Viking aesthetic. And I was talking to, you know, they had axes and shields and that sort of thing. And I was talking to the vendor about just, you know, family heritage, you know, and I'm saying, yeah, you know, I'm very interested about my family's heritage on my dad's side, because it's mostly German and Dutch. And there's other things, but it's predominantly German and Dutch. And he said, well, then you've got Viking in you at some point, because of how widespread the people went at, you know, between the raids and everything. It's, you know, they were all over the place. So if you've got ancestry in you're German and Dutch, you know, then you've got Viking blood in you or whatever. I was like, huh, that's interesting. And then fast forward to, you know, maybe about 7 years ago, I was at a point in my life where I was really not into Christianity anymore. I had a lot of doubts and questions, and just things didn't feel right. And, you know, I you know, of course, the Vikings thing came out, and I was like, oh, well, maybe I should look at that more and see. Because I remember that one time where that guy said, you know, I had Viking blood or Viking ancestors, and come to find out what that really means, and that the Vikings were, you know, it was an age, it was a time period in time, and it's largely used to describe the north, you know, northern Europe and the Germanic people. But it's, you know, it was an occupation, it was a thing to do. It wasn't, you know, you weren't Viking because you were born one, you were Viking because you did the thing to that classified you as such. You went raiding, you did all that crazy stuff. So I learned more about that, and yeah, so I mean, that, like, it's interesting to hear people's stories of origin and be like, yeah, it might have been the TV show, might have been a movie, might have been a conversation, and then that's the seed that planted there, the tree that grows into their path. So what was your background?
it's always interesting to hear that story from people, and everyone's story is different, you know. It's great. I mean, mine, it started probably 30 years ago, but I think I was always pagan before that. Even I would always just feel something different in the woods around trees than I would when I was in the street or in, you know, the city, and I could never quite put a name to it or any sort of significance to it. I got into my teens, 17, 18, and I think around the time of life you start to question a lot, don't you? And I started to think about, you know, my origins, my belonging, but not just my own, the story, you know, the story of the land and the people and, you know, religion and philosophy and things like that. And everything that we were taught in school was about Christianity, the history of Christianity. Well, that's only a thousand years old in this country. So what happened before that? There's a lot of history that we haven't really been told very much about. So the internet wasn't around then, you know. You had to go to a library and read books. So that's what I did. And I started to read and find out about, you know, the Celts and the Saxons and the Vikings, etc. And I bought a couple of books on mythology, Celtic and Vikings, that made relevant to the British Isles, you know. And certainly the Norse and the Saxon stuff, it just started to click with me a bit more. So I think that's what I feel under that tree. That's that yew tree, that cool, dark quietness, that's Odin. It's like a foreboding sort of presence there, and a massive tower. And well, that's Thor, the oak tree, you know. And I started to see that the stories weren't just stories, that they were representations of things in nature and the cycles of nature. And how people have used them to live by, you know, the death of Balder, etc., you know, the dying of the sun, the coming of the winter. It's time to, you know, harvest and sort of buckle down for winter, because it's coming, it's going to be a hard time. Right. So it just really resonated with me there that was the right path, certainly for me, and that everything I've ever felt in nature was that. Essentially, what people have felt for.
Right.
I think.
I noticed the thing when you said, you know, I think I've always been pagan, and then you made a statement that kind of stuck out. You know, didn't really know what to call it. And that's a really interesting thing, because people that were pagan at the time, they didn't have a name for what they were. They just were what they were, right? They weren't heathens. That was a name that was given to them by the Christians. You know, they were called pagans. They were called this by the Christians because that they weren't Christian. You know, they weren't the thing that everybody else was. So, and growing up myself, you know, thinking back on it, like, yeah, sure. I was raised as a Christian and learned Christian worldviews and doctrines and that sort of thing. But I was always, you know, I've talked about this plenty of times. Like, I didn't, as a kid growing up, like, I didn't want to go play video games. I didn't want to stay inside. I wanted to be outside. I wanted to go into the woods. I wanted to go play in the, you know, in the rivers or the sea or whatever. I wanted to be out in nature. And, so I think maybe, you know, whether I knew it or not at the time, but thinking back on it now, it's always been a part of me. It's always been there, kind of dormant and living in a way that I just didn't know what to call her or didn't call myself that at the time.
Yeah. And like you said, it didn't have a name. It was just what people did all over the world. I think that the similarities in the stories are fascinating, from Norse to, you know, Native American to ancient Greek. You know, there are sky fathers and earth mothers and gods of war and death, you know, all these things. And, I think they were originated from the sort of seat of mankind, you know, and as people have migrated, these stories have gone and evolved with them and taken on the characteristics of their landscapes. And the gods have developed and evolved and become their own names and personalities that relate to that landscape.
Yeah. And I think it's the similarities across cultures. It's, you know, who, you know, the North would call, you know, Odin, you know, the people South would call Woden, you know what I mean? Like, just etymologically speaking, you know, the linguistics and the similarities. But again, like you're saying, how, you know, the sky fathers, the earth mothers, those are aesthetics, and those are, builds of the sacred or of the divine that we see across all places in the world. And it you know, when we talk about how, you know, I think a lot of pagans, you know, no matter where you go in the world, and whether they're Germanic pagans or Celtic pagans or Hellenistic or whatever, you know, I think the adoration, the appreciation, the veneration of nature, we're all just kind of animistic pagans. Yeah. You know, like, you could you know, whether you want to be Germanic or whatever, it's, you know, we appreciate and we know that there are bigger things than just us that exist in the world around us, and we don't feel so, I don't know, maybe obligated to focus on the big gods and goddesses. You're like, yeah, they are important and they deserve you know, the respect and the veneration that they that we give them. But on the day-to-day stuff, you know, like, we're connecting with spirits all around us that are literally right here with us, not in some realm that we can't tangibly connect to. So I think that that's important to to remember as well. And for me, when I first became pagan, you know, because of the Christian baggage, right, because of being focused on, you know, one single God, you know, like I came into paganism thinking that I had to do the same thing with the Germanic gods, you know, like, yeah. Oh, you know, I'm going to be in trouble if I don't.
And I see that quite a lot, particularly in American pagans, that they almost just supplant God and Jesus with pagan gods and elevate them right up there to the same status and level of devotion. And, you know, I would never say to anyone that, that they're doing it wrong, but for me, that's not fair. They're on our level. They're in everything that we do and experience. They're around us all the time. They're in the trees, the earth. You know, they influence everything. They're not something that we're trying to aspire to up there in the next life. You know, they're a part of this life.
That's interesting how you bring that up. That it's specifically in American heathenry or American pagans, and I did want to bring that up because I've, you know, again, speaking to different people from across the world, the perception of heathenry in North America, largely from what I've seen, it's almost like that we're getting, I don't say laughed at, but the perception from places like the UK or other areas in Europe and where this all sort of originated from, they people are like, what are you guys doing over there, man? Like, why? And I don't know if that's just, you know, yeah, it's, us picking up on the Christianity aspect of things and it's a skewed view of it or what, but it's interesting that you bring that up.
Yeah, it's certainly something I experienced more from the States than the people I talk to anywhere else. And it probably is that sort of hardline Christian upbringing that is more prevalent there than perhaps it is in other places. I don't know. But like I said, I would never say to anyone that they're doing it wrong. The way I do it is right. I would never prescribe it to anybody else. Yeah. I think it's for everyone to find their own relationship with the gods and their own way. You know, I give to anyone, and I get asked quite a bit, you know, what should I do with this? Read the stories, just read and understand who they are, and then get to know the characters, like, you know, your own friends and family, start feeding them in the world around you, and, you know, find your own way from there.
Yeah, I like how you said, you know, it's like with dealing with your friends and family, because I've had conversations with other people as well, and some actually very recently, and you've probably heard this type of thing that I'm about to say, where people feel like they are disconnected from the gods, or they feel like maybe I'm cursed by the gods because I did something wrong. And I'm like, don't think that's how this works. And I use the analogy. I'm like, look, I'm best friends with certain people and I don't even talk to them every day. And it's okay because they're doing their own thing. So if you're not dealing with the gods every day, that's kind of like, I compare it. It's very similar. Like, you don't have to deal with the gods every single day in order to be close with the gods. You might go a week without talking to your best friend, but you are still your best. They're still your best friend. Yes, you know,
some people will be the right thing to do. Faith can be an emotional and spiritual comfort and a crutch for us, can't it? In times of difficulty, it's what people turn to, isn't it? And for some people, that devoutness, that everyday ritual, will be the thing that gives them the comfort.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was there at one point too, and I'm not the same pagan now as I was even yesterday, and certainly not last year or 7 years ago when I first discovered these things. I was doing things differently back then than I am doing, than I'm doing right now. You know, it's a growth process. It's like, you know, the tree that is planted today becomes a tree in several years and then grows into something massive and different, you know? So it's a growth process. You're not going to be the same person, pagan. Your faith is going to evolve. Your faith is going to grow too. So I think, you know, when you're feeling those things in those moments, it's part of what you need to learn. For your journey, for your path, it's part of the learning process. It's part of the growth,
for sure. And carving the gods has been a massive learning experience for me. I think if this had never gone the way that it did and become as big as it has, I would probably still be, I'll be sat there with Odin and Thor because they're my guys, you know. I've not really explored much beyond that. But when I get somebody messages me, could you make me a Hel? Could you make me a Loki? I'm like, oh, well, I don't really know too much about them. So I'll go back, I'll read the story again, and then I'll start to think about how they relate to some of my life experience and some of the things I've seen in the world around me. And then they start to become more alive to me. And I get the respect and the understanding and the empathy for a new God. So it's been really rewarding in that unexpected way for me to have carved probably most of the pantheon of gods now and have met a lot of characters that I probably wouldn't have gone out of my way to identify with otherwise.
Sounds almost like the carving for you, the experience of putting blade to wood and creating a personality, creating a life, basically, is a ritual in itself, an ongoing ritual experience.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Spiritual, like, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like I say, each one is a reflection, not only on their story, how their story relates to me, and like I say, my own experiences of situations where I feel like what they represent has been present or has been a factor, and trying to put myself in their position in their stories and how I might have felt and why did they act the way they did. You get a real sort of empathy for the character, and they become like a person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Get to know them, give them more life, I think.
I feel like that's I felt that way when I've made rune sets. It's, again, it's not just, oh, you want a rune set, you know, and then I go through the mechanics of it all and here's your rune set, right? It's entering like a headspace. It's putting yourself and separating yourself from, you know, the normal routines of the day to day and stepping into a headspace that allows you to really focus on the purpose behind this. You know, why did somebody reach out to me instead of just, you know, buy something off of Amazon that's been mass produced? You know, obviously that it speaks to them to the point and it's important to them. So now let me put that in energy and put that focus into what I'm doing. And then the learning of and studying of the runes, I mean, that's a whole topic in and of itself. Similarly with you and the gods, like when you're carving Odin's eye or, you know, making a clear distinction between the two sides of Hel's face, you know, or whatever the strength of Thor and how that's going to, I guess, become something into the carving. Like, I don't know, just it's such a connecting experience. It's more than just it doing it.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard to put into words sometimes. It's very,
You've had some actually really neat stories with things that have happened, like when you make a mistake or you cut a little bit too much out of it, you know, and how it either becomes part of the uniqueness of that piece or how it's, you know, sacrificed into the fire or whatever. I mean, can you talk a little bit about those types of things too, and maybe give the audience some insight as to.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't always go right. When I started out, I meticulously planned my piece, sketch it and sketch it again and sketch it onto the wood and go. I've done them so long now, it's more intuitive. I just pick up the piece of wood. It's right, okay, you're Thor, right, listen, and just go through that whole thing of when Thor's been present in my life, his stories, what he represents, and he will start to come out. 99% of the time it goes right because I've been doing it a long time now, and the more you do something the better you get it. Every now and then it will go wrong, and sometimes it will be a happy accident, normally with Loki, funny enough. There'll be a slip or something, we'll just go a little bit wrong, and actually that's brought him more alive, that's widened his smile or whatever, and it's, you know, it's added something to the piece, but you know, sometimes it isn't good enough, and they have to be good enough. Everything that leaves here is the absolute best that I can do. If it isn't good enough, it will go in the fire because I just I won't put it out there. It's too important for what it represents, the, you know, the relationship the person is going to have with it, but also as a reflection of me. If I'm putting out stuff that I don't think is good enough, what does that say about me as a person? I would rather throw it away and start again than do that, because I think at the end of the day, reputation is all we've got, isn't it, really, in this world?
That's the thing that does not ever die.
Yeah.
You know, the reputation of a well-earned, or however it says in the Hall of Mall. Yeah.
Yeah, but I do. I have some funny little, you probably call them coincidences. I like to call them sort of synchronicities, where I think the first time I carved Skadi, she was one I'd never really knew much about. She's become one of my favourites since. I finished carving her. I was really happy with her. I sat down to photograph on a table. It was a bit of an overcast day. The moment I sat her down and got my phone out to take a photo, this hailstorm just bolted out of nowhere and just pelted the table she was on in sort of big white hailstones. I managed to get a couple of pictures and then it was gone. The sun was out and the ice was melting and it was just gone. But what are the chances?
Yeah.
That in that instant it decided to do that. I've had a few little things like that. We had a double rainbow out here when I finished carving Heimdall, and again sitting down to photo, my daughter was out here with me. I said, look, rainbow, and I looked up and there was not just one rainbow but a double rainbow.
Wow.
Because yeah things like that are cool, you know. And you know, I don't think I believe in magic in the sense of pulling rabbits out of hats, but I think there are lots of things that are magic. It's the synchronicity, the interconnectedness of things. I think magic is ultimately being able to change consciousness or perception through an external influence. So a goalpost is a piece of magic, because someone on their way to work in the morning walks past their Odin goalpost and puts them in a different state of mind for that day. That's magic. They see a crow at the bus stop waiting for the bus to go to work. They think it's a raven, Odin, and it's changed the way they go into that meeting that morning. That's magic, you know. External influences altering our behaviours, I guess, are what I consider magic to be. Not putting rabbits out of hat.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on that. And the application of magic, we are workers of magic in so many ways that we don't even think about. You know what I mean? Like you're saying, like the influences that we can have on those external factors, like we are tied into this web, and the way we interact and what we do, I mean, it's constantly changing, it's constantly shifting, and so we have a very powerful place in the universe, and what we do or don't do shapes that web.
It's
constantly
butterfly's wings, isn't it? You know, it's the concept of weird, where all things are connected. I've got room sets. 30 years I've only ever carved 4 room sets, because I find it frankly exhausting to do. But I very rarely consult them now. What I tend to do instead, I'll sit out here with my goalposts in front of the fire. If I've got a question or a quandary or something that I want to mull over, I will sit with them by the fire, and one of them will stand out in some way. The fire will catch an eye, or just the way that one is turned slightly towards another one will grab my attention. And it kind of works in the same way that runes do. I think it's a psychological thing. My subconscious is looking for an answer, and there it is. That's it. That little thing tells me what I need to know. Do you understand? I don't know if I'm explaining.
Yeah. No, I definitely get it. And like divination or tools to use for divination. It's always like just this. Why are you like, why are you here? What are you asking? What are you looking for? And I think we all have that desire to get answers. And so where we seek those answers from should be what feels right for us.
Yeah.
not everybody's going to be like, let me go consult in the runes, or let me go talk to a, you know, a rune reader or tarot or bones or, you know, whatever. Some people are just going to, like you, you know, just sit in the audience of the gods, go out into the woods, sit under a tree, sit in the river, go into the ocean, whatever, you know, connect. And then there's your answers. Your things come to you in that way. Cause you're, that's what feels better. That's what feels best. That's what feels right. That's what works for you.
Yeah. And that's it. You know, I don't think it's a matter of these things reaching into the ether and predicting the future for us. I think the answers are in us. We know the answers. We just need that prompt, that thing that connects with our subconscious. And it's, there it is. That's it. And it opens up a new avenue of thought or whatever. And it's on the honest friend quite often. It's not the answer you wanted. It's the one you've closed the door on because you didn't want to consider it, but you're faced with it, and it's
sometimes, you know, you know, and I think a lot of times too, like when we're in those positions of asking questions, most of the time, like you say, you know, we know the answer already, but maybe we're just trying to get around it or find something that maybe doesn't make us feel so uncomfortable. Because sometimes, you know, the right answer is the truth, and the truth sometimes it's tough to swallow. But you got to face the music. You gotta, you know, deal with the hand that's dealt to you, and make the best of it.
For sure.
So Chris, before I wrap things up, I am going to ask you to just let everybody know where you can be found, how they can support you. I know you've got the Gungnir God Post Facebook page. What else do you have going on? How else can people find you and support you?
So Gungnir God Post is on Facebook, it's on Instagram, and I'm on Patreon. Patreon at the moment is the only way that people can commission pieces from me. Going back right to the start of our conversation, I'm in this position where the demand for what I could create far outstrips my capacity to create it. And I started out on a Sunday, I would just release two commission slots, and the first two people to grab them. And it just wasn't fair. So by doing it this way, people can support me. See, for like £1, $1.50 a month is you know, the minimum amount. It just helps me to sort of build for the future a little. And it just narrows the kind of pool of people that I create for at the moment. I put some content on there, a lot of the stuff we talked about today, some articles, my thoughts and reflections. And there's like a nice little Discord community on there where patrons get together and share their own sort of thoughts and experiences. So that's it. Facebook, Instagram, Patreon. Any support at all, whether it's material, spiritual, you know, just the following that I've got on social media is, you know, is really sort of, wow, it's amazing. It's fantastic, really, to know that I've reached that many people who identify with what I do. It's incredible, really. So thanks.
That's great. Yeah. So I'm going to, you know, make sure everybody knows that's where they can follow you. Those links are annotated down in the description and the show notes of the podcast. So for everybody listening and watching today, make sure that you check those areas out and follow what Chris does on the various platforms and support him in any way that you can. And thank you very much, Chris. Before you jump off of here, just stand by so that I can bid everybody else adieu. It has been a wonderful conversation. I've had a really fun time talking with you today, and thank you for sharing so much of what you do and your past and your life with not just me but with everybody here. And I hope that you've had a good time and sharing those bits of information with us.
Yeah,
so thank you.
Thanks so much for having me, Jesse. It's been great. It's been really great to sort of to talk to you face to face and you know to share some of those things. It's been brilliant, so thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. And I mean, you never know, right? Hopefully things happen one day where I'm able to make it across the pond. And if I'm ever thinking of doing that, I'm going to definitely reach out to you and meet actually personally face to face. I never take anything for granted and say, well, it'll never happen. I mean, it's people do this every day. So I would love to shake your hand, meet you in person, maybe share an ale or horn of meat or whatever it is that you partake of, coffee even, doesn't matter. Just, yeah, it would be great. So hopefully that happens for us one day.
Yeah. Cheers, Jesse.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Before we leave, make sure again that you are following Gungnir God posts in all of the ways that you can. Be sure to also like, follow, share, and subscribe to the Random Heathen Ramblings podcast on Midgard Musings. All the ways that you can do that. Check the Linktree link in the description for all the ways that you can support what I do here. Thank you so much for tuning in today. And until we all talk again, may the gods continue to notice you and may your ancestors smile upon you.